Hey, this is Martin Cove, and most of you know me as John Kreese in The Karate Kid. I'm listening to Drunk on Comics, and I'm having a good time. I'm almost getting drunk.
Drunk on Comics presents the
special edition interviews for Motor City Comic Con Part 2.
Okay, we'll run with that.
Well, everybody, we are taking our normal weekend off, primarily because Kevin got married, so congratulations.
Yes.
But also because we had so much fun at Motor City that we needed a little time to recoup.
Yeah, very much so. I could probably take another 3 weeks off and still not recover.
Or we could just go do it again.
I would totally love to do that. I don't know if my body could do that, but
I would be willing to bet that another 3 days right now would be very possible.
Get a nerdy surge in us.
Oh, I thought you said get a nerdy surgeon.
Oh.
I'm like, a nerdy surgeon? What are they going to do? Can they fix my liver? So, yeah, we've got some more interviews from Motor City here for you. The first interview that we have up for you is Tyler Shainline and Andy Siriano. And then a little cross-potting with our buddy Jay from Nelligan Weapon, where he and I got to talk to Jane McNeil of The Walking Dead.
Yep, we also got the chance to talk to Scotty Young, as well as his new book coming out, which one of my favorite characters, Rocket Raccoon. I know you don't really care for
Rocket, that. Oh, Rocket's fine. I mean, it's not like he's writing The Watcher and drawing The Watcher. I'd be rough with that one. I got to very briefly talk to Mike McCone, super, super nice gentleman. Wished that he would have had more time, but his line was backing up quickly, so we had to cut it pretty short.
And then the best interview that you will ever hear around was with Dirk Manning. That's all we will say. It was with him. He was included somehow.
It's a Dirk Manning interview.
Yes.
Yeah, so check that out, and we'll be back to talk to you guys here before we let you go. Okay, we are back here at Motor City, and Kevin and I have got Tyler Shainline and Andy Siriano with us today. How's it going, gents?
Hey, it's going great. Yeah, man. Saturday, Motor City Comic Con.
I'm in Detroit. I've only been shot twice. That's a good day.
And it's been by me. So.
Dude, it's not really a getting shot if it only grazes you. So,
good point.
Yeah. So, Tyler, we'll kind of start with you. Kind of give us a little background of you know, what you've done, what you're working on now, and you know, we'll kind of work around to that. Andy's feverishly signing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Running away.
I've been working in comics in various forms pretty much my entire life, either for comic book stores. I worked for the very first store that was ever won in Eisner, Comic Relief in Berkeley. From there, I went on to work various positions at Image Comics, production manager and traffic manager there. And then I was lucky enough that my wife said one day, hey, do you want to quit your job and spend your time writing comics? I said, absolutely. So I was lucky enough to team up with Andy right off the bat. We're doing a book called Liberty Justice. Basically, Pam Grier in outer space, flying around, hooking up and killing people all over. It's a lot of fun, and his art and colors make it come alive.
Yeah, man, we're trying to really take advantage of 70s, late 70s, early 80s, exploitation movies, comics. You know, kind of our format itself kind of harkens to, you know, the old Marvel Treasury editions or the science fiction. Was it like Epic ran those? The giant size.
The term that I was using yesterday trying to explain the idea to people, and I don't know if I got it from you or if it was my evil little mind, but I said it was spaceploitation.
Oh, I'm stealing that. Amazing. Yeah, yes. I mean, I told you that.
That's an excellent wordsmith.
Yeah.
Word right there. Nice. Spaceploitation.
Yeah, nice. It was born out of him and I just texting back and forth. He was sending me photos of himself watching Emmanuel in space.
Yeah, that was a classic.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I grew up watching him.
Exactly. Right?
Oh,
watching Emmanuel.
Hell, you do.
The Emmanuel series, slow, man.
I started watching, like, all those Emmanuel
movies. Was it Krista Allen or something, right?
Wow, I can't.
There were lots of boobs in those movies.
Yes. I know, man, but that's where my friends had skin in the accident. Or whatever.
He said he grew up watching those movies.
That's awesome. Now, I picked up from you yesterday the largest comic I've ever purchased, and I don't mean necessarily the thickest comic.
No, I mean, imagine if it was that thick, you wouldn't be able to fit it in your car. It wouldn't make any sort of sense.
No, it's what, 11 by 17?
Exactly 11 by 17.
Yeah. So
it's full size. It's at size comic page.
That's it. I've never seen one.
We're not afraid. We're not afraid to go big.
And that, honestly, it was all that Andy's idea to go big that way. I actually tried
to talk him out. I'm a size queen. Total size queen.
I tried to talk him out of it. Working with retailers, they always complain, we don't like it big. We want things that fit right in the little cubby holes that we created. And I was completely wrong. Everyone's been blown away by the size, and it makes his art pop so large, and his colors just explode off the page. It was a great move on Andy's part. I'm glad he didn't listen to me.
Well, again, I mean, not only like the well, I rarely listen to Tyler anyway. It should be noted.
you can see it in the art.
Yeah, but you know, the aside from trying to you know, play on the old 70s and early 80s size books. Also, it was like everything we do in the book is kind of has to do with scale and space and outer space, and I wanted to really allude to the, you know, the size of the characters against, you know, giant planets and giant starships and stuff that I think really breathes and really, you know, could only be showcased in a book that size.
And this is also something you can't reproduce digitally. You know, you'd have to have like three iPads stacked up on each other to even come close.
Can you even imagine trying to read it on your phone?
No. It wouldn't translate at all. No, absolutely not.
Now, Liberty Justice, I know that I read, what was it, six pages in the back of Burnley Orphanage?
Yeah,
that
it's
came
been
out
in
last
the...
week and a half?
Correct, yeah. It's been yeah. In the, that just came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Cena
Grace
is super cool putting us in there, and Eric's...
Starkings, initially, Richard Starkings put us in the back of two issues of Elephant Men to start off with. And then we're in the back of Cena's book, and then we're hoping to announce something coming up soon about it going out with the publisher.
Oh, okay.
As an ongoing.
Yeah. Now, so we can't talk about it. It's not going to be available yet to go full published?
You can go off of my site. You can get it off of my website.
Perfect.
Yeah, andyupdates.blogspot.com. And then, or just find me and Tyler somewhere online or at a con.
Yeah. Okay.
So, again, the idea with the giant book was I want something to stand out on a table, you know, something that nobody else had or could get anywhere else. Because I knew, like, retailers, you know, would turn their nose up at a book this size. But I was like, fuck it, I don't care, because we're not really doing this, you know, we're not doing this for money. We're not doing this for, I mean, it'd be cool to make money, mind you, but, like, this is a passion project, and so why not do it the way you want to do it? You know what I mean? This is something we do in the middle of the night when we put our kids to bed and after we watch Emmanuel in Space. or Cleopatra 2929.
And you're like, crap, I can't hop in the cold shower.
Right, exactly.
The kids.
So I was like, fuck it, let's just do it the way we want to do it. You know, let's do it the size.
It's a gorgeous book. I've read a few pages. I can't wait to finish reading the whole thing. I've got it here. I brought it back into the show with me so I can sit and read
it. Awesome. Excellent.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, now, Andy, you also do Samurai Jack.
I do, yeah. For IDW, came out with the publishing rights to Samurai Jack about a year ago. And I actually worked on the original series as a character designer for
the television show.
Yeah. So I've been doing animation for about 20 years, bouncing back and forth between comics. I also do, like, the Batman Brave and the Bold. Both series and comic books, and so it was just kind of a natural fit to jump on the Samurai Jack book. Try to keep it legit, try to keep it really you know, stylistically true to the series.
Is there any difference between drawing for animation and drawing for print as far as things that you
can? Oh, absolutely, man. Yeah, I mean, you can put a lot more lines in the print version, and having like Samurai Jack, I actually added more lines to it because the original animated show obviously was lineless. We dropped all the holding lines. And so if you did that on a printed page, it just kind of falls flat. It doesn't feel like there's a sense of movement. And we're trying to translate something that had a lot of movement to a printed page. Just, you know, I was trying to come up with a style that would work not only to showcase the speed, but also something I could do in a relatively short amount of time and keep a day job, which I also have with Disney TV, drawing Mickey Mouse.
Oh, wow.
And then at night, drawing...
Dirty pictures from me.
Yeah, dirty pictures from Tyler, yeah.
It brings a whole new idea to the kind of text messages you guys
send. Oh, you have no idea. They're filthy. It's absolutely filthy. Well, and then the scripts I send them are... filthier than when it even comes out in the book.
But I like when it's like, oh, you know what I'm talking about. He's like, if you're sick in the head like me, and I know you are.
You know, this brings a whole new level to how creators work together.
mean, and that's actually one of the things that we like to talk to people a lot about is the teamwork process that you have. Because in a lot of other books, somebody may write a script and then the script's sent off to the artist and they may or may not be talking. They may or may not be speaking the same language.
I mean, there could be an editor that's a go-between, that's the bridge. And so you never have any contact with each other. But, I mean, Tyler, I'll bug him. He'll text me photos of his drawings. Like, I'll ask him like what he's thinking for a layout or something. So he'll actually
he'll get little drawings of stick figures screwing all on top of a spaceship. I'll be like this.
I'm like, oh. I just couldn't see it. I just couldn't see how she could fit his penis inside.
All right. So this is definitely a family book.
It's all ages. All ages. We like to say we've been approached by Boom and Archie.
So the next couple pages are going to be in the back of Samurai Jack. Then.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. They're totally comfortable with it. Yeah.
So now, where can people find it one more time? The website.
Okay, you go to andyupdates.blogspot.com, or go to my Tumblr. You can find it. You find either of us online. I'm at
both of us are on Twitter.
Yeah, at wolfboy74.
At Tyler Shaneline.
You can also go to cosmicscoundrels.com, and I'll have a link to how to get the book as well.
Awesome. Guys, is there anything else that people need to know, that they should be aware of, anything else you're working on that we can talk about now? Or
I got a couple other books that will be getting announced at San Diego, which I'm excited about, but nothing I can say about until then. But that's
okay. All right. Well, cool, guys. We will let you get back. We're holding up your line here. So thank you so much.
I also got, check out cosmicscoundrels.com. We'll have the link up.
Yeah, absolutely.
To it soon. So.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Okay, kids. We're here. We're continuing our Drunk on Comics and Elegant Weapon cross-pod sessions at Motor City Comic Con 2014. And we are hanging out with Jay McNeil, Patricia of The Walking Dead. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a wonderful weekend. You've been having fun?
I have.
Yeah.
And luckily, I got to know you guys early on.
We tend to bring the party a little bit.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Keep it relaxed.
I knew what door to knock on.
Yeah. You did, actually. I completely forgot about that. Yeah.
Well, it came from our first evening when we got out here, and you and Scott Wilson just hanging out by the fire and such. And that was a great, great evening, just hanging out and chilling and talking by the fire. We had a lot of fun. So, you and him are pretty close friends, having worked together. You guys seem to stay pretty tight after the show, yeah?
Well, we bonded so immediately as Herschel's family, all of us. And so Scott was really a sort of a mentor for me, and I think really for a lot of the other characters as well. A lot of us were young actors, I'm not young, but we were not as seasoned, obviously. And Scott was a wealth of information and support. Just as his character is such a rock, I mean, he's just so supportive and loving and caring. And the thing about Scott, too, is he's so genuine. There's just no bullshit to Scott. He is absolutely, has loved this playing the character of Herschel. And this whole resurgence of his career has been amazing for him. And he loves, meeting the fans and stuff, so...
Well, he's dominating the con this year. His line has been a constant mass...
Well, in a way, that's a protest to him being, killed off, in my opinion. I mean, I think people are, pissed off about it.
That hurt. When that sword went through, everyone felt it. You were like, oh, my God,
And I hadn't talked to him in a long time, so I didn't know that was happening. And I just started crying, and I got on the phone the next day. I'm like, Scott, are you okay?
So you watched it live with the rest of us?
Yeah. I didn't know anything about that. I mean, I knew some things that were going to happen in season 3 after I was gone, but I didn't really have any idea that was going to happen. So, I mean, I figured they'd get rid of the governor around that time, but I didn't think they were going to take out Scott. I was like, man.
Yeah.
Well, me being a comic book guy, and I've read every issue of The Walking Dead, the thing that I do enjoy about the show is that it does not follow exactly what the comic. They're parallel roads that run right next to each other, but they are not the same road. And so it's nice because the show keeps you on your toes, makes it so that you don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you think you know,
Yeah, but you don't know. It's it's parallel. They get to the same place, but kind of through different ways, you know? So it's really neat. You're saying, you know, the whole family dynamic on the farm with you and Scott and everybody. Was there any kind of prep time before they kind of brought the group in? Did you guys spend any private time together, just like you and Otis and everybody, to kind of get that feeling?
No.
No?
No.
They just tossed you right in?
I got there the day before, and so did Emily Kinney. She and I literally walked on that set at the same time. And Andrew was on set, came over. I was standing there like, I was completely freaked out. I was nervous. I didn't know what to do. Comes over and kisses me and hugs me and welcomes me, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then literally the next day we're on set and scrambling on those front steps to figure out, am I Herschel's daughter? Am I, you know, because it was not clear. Nobody had given me any previous scripts. And literally I had been given the scenes that I was auditioning with and a brief synopsis and a little tiny character description, and I just winged it, you know, with the audition. I felt like I knew her, but I didn't know any storyline.
Right.
You know, so we were literally putting it together that morning in the farmhouse.
Wow.
I mean, so I think Scott probably had a lot more information than I know Maggie did, that Lauren did, but Emily and James and Scott, we were all kind of thrown in there, you know.
Trial by fire.
Well, that's pretty much, you know, how you got to deal with it sometimes. So you weren't familiar with The Walking Dead.
No.
And you get, you know, you get a script, you get a chance to do this, and when you see the word zombies or whatever, and you realize a zombie show, what's your first thoughts? Is this like, did you realize it was going to be as dramatic a show? Like, not just like people running from zombies, you know what I mean? There's so much more into it.
Let me think about that for a second. Just from the little scenes that I had to do, I felt like the writing was pretty good. So I figured that this, you know, obviously had to have a bigger significance. And when I got my first script and read through it, I'm like, oh, you know, this is really about humanity. This is not necessarily about zombies. It's not a show about dying. It's a show about living.
Exactly.
Or trying to. So, and it's like Scott said in the panel that we had, you know, because the zombies are so well done, because Frank Darabont and Gail Ann Hurd wanted to be the first people to do zombies, you know, on TV, and we knew that was, you know, the vampire thing is kind of dying out, and the witch thing's dying out, next thing's going to be zombies. They wanted to make sure they were the first. They really pushed hard to do that. And they were going to set a precedent that nobody else could touch. So they got Greg Nicotero and his KB group to
genius.
Do.
He's a genius.
I mean, he is an absolute genius and a wonderful person as well. And those guys, I mean, Andy Schoenberg and all of his guys are just wonderful. Kevin Wassner. Mm-hmm. And so it's like Scott said, I mean, if the zombies had looked stupid, it would have made everything else ridiculous. But because there was so much integrity in every level of it, and the production quality was so great, at the bar set by Frank Darabont, you know, we were set up for success.
Yeah.
So you couldn't help but give everything you had to it to make sure that your part of it was going to measure up to the level that everybody else is bringing to it.
Well, and I think for the comic book fan, you know, when they, you know, obviously there's excitement when they hear that this is being made into a show. But, yeah, there's definitely that little bit of nervousness. It's like, you know, because fanboys definitely, they love their books.
Yeah.
And if you screw them up, they are one of the most vocal groups you'll ever find.
Right.
And I think that's why the show has been such a success, because the quality of the acting to the, you know, the production and everything, it's on par. Like, you can't sit there and go, you know, they really should have tried and done this a little bit better. There's not that, there isn't anything in there that you can say, they could have done that better. It's just, it's there.
No, I mean, you might, you know, toss around some other options about how things are going to play out, but you can't argue with the quality.
No. I know around your time on the show, it wasn't a time of mass herds like we're seeing now and kind of in the beginning of zombies. It was more, you know, individual situations like the well scene.
Yeah.
When they
He is still the grossest.
That is the grossest. Where you were around for when that was all shot and everything.
Yeah, well, I went into the makeup trailer that morning and I saw the picture of the Well Walker in front of my makeup stand. I'm like, God knows. Oh, my God. You know, and then that afternoon was the day they shot that. So I wasn't in the scene, but I went and watched it. And honestly, irony was, I mean, he was throwing up. It grossed him out so much. He was about to throw. He threw up at one point.
Wow.
It just freaked him out so bad. And it was nauseating. You know, I can't imagine how they got through that Guts episode in season one.
Oh, with Dale?
Yeah.
Oh my
God. No. In season one, Guts, when they put the entrails on them.
They're rubbing it on themselves so that the walkers don't smell.
Hide the smell and everything. Yeah.
Oh. That makes me sick thinking about it.
There's some hardcore stuff. Like for a television show, but you know, it's got its proper time slot and all that stuff, but they're pushing it.
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
At times they're pushing it, and you're just like, it's gut wrenching.
Yeah.
Like when you went out, was because stuff starts going crazy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's madness and people are like, as you're watching, you're like, okay, stuff's about to go down. And then you went out like that and it's holy shit. And what was that like to film? Like, I guess there's a lot of technical stuff involved there.
Well, you know, I found out the episode before that I wasn't going to make it past the end of season two, which I expected, but I didn't want to hear. I mean, you're always hoping that one little shred of hope they changed their mind, because it did happen. It happened to Scott. They were going to take Scott out and they kept him. And he said today, you know, the turnaround for him was Herschel's bar scene. And that's when they came back to him and said, we're really rethinking this now. So, you know, and my joke to Scott was, too bad, you know, Patricia wasn't mixing some drinks that day at the bar. Should have been the damn bartender instead of the nurse. But, you know, I guess I felt like I was going to, you know, if you're going to kill me off. I mean, I understand. I wasn't mad. I was sad. But I'm like, I'm going to make this the best, you know, I can possibly do. So it was the first time that I had ever seen that many zombies. And it was really the first time the zombies ever scared me.
Yeah.
Because opening that door and seeing them all out, it was really freaky. I mean, it was terrifying. And it was freezing cold. And, you know, I would listen on my iPod. I was listening to the Hendrix version of All Along the Watchtower. And, you know...
Oh,
that
think
was,
of that scene, having a song like that. Oh,
yeah, I was and I would listen to Dylan's, like, In My Time of Dying and all this shit, and I'm like, I'm so depressed, I gotta go die. So, you know, we do the scene where we're running out, and it's all rapid fire and all the stuff that's happening. And we shot it in two segments. One is just me running out and actually them clotheslining me, taking me down. I think we did three takes of it, and, we used zombies that, you know, Greg had handpicked, guys that he worked with a lot who'd done the more technical scenes, and they were sweethearts. You know, they were like, did we hurt you? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I felt bad for them. I was like putting my jacket on them.
How do you do a decapitation? Like,
well, it was a bite in the jugular.
Okay.
So anyway, we did that part, and then the next night in second unit, they sent me to makeup, and they did the prosthetic, giving me this fat neck, which I really didn't like, because I'm like so vain. And I'm like, dude, my neck looks so fat. And they wired it up around my back for the tube to come out so that the bite was here. And then the tube was there, and as soon as the guy bit it, they were squirting the blood tank, so it was just, you know, like that. And I remember getting up there, and Gail Ann was watching, and... you know, Andrew Lincoln and whoever wasn't working on first unit, we usually try to watch each other's death scenes. So I had Scott and Andrew and Emily and James and Lori and some of them out there watching. And I said, so how many takes do I get? And Greg Nicotero's like, one.
That was my next question.
Wow.
Was, can you do that over?
Yeah.
I didn't want to. They didn't have enough time.
Yeah.
You know, it was 45 minutes to an hour to get me in that makeup. And then I'm like, do it, you know. So luckily we got that bite in one take, and then I'm doing good. He let me do an outtake of it where he just sort of patched a little bit so I could look in the camera after he bit me and go, bite me. Like that. But it never ended up on any of the outtakes, which I was kind of sad about, but I'm like, I gotta get my outtake here. So
your moment in that scene was such pure panic. Like, everybody was scrambling and running, but you above all were just like, like, and the way you're saying that was the first time they freaked you out, you must have been there, eh? Like,
Well, I mean, you know, it was the first time I ever had to die in anything, and I didn't really have a lot of film and TV experience. I never had a play where I had to die. Well, actually, that's not true. I think I did some Greek drama in college where I died, but, you know, so it was a different thing, and I knew that I wanted to nail it, and honestly, I had had cancer, so when I thought about the zombies, I thought about cancer coming back. That was part of what that was part of the terror that I put inside myself. And so that was, it wasn't just zombies, it was that too. Wow. That was another level I added to it, so, which is frightening.
What's the come down like that? You know, after you're done the scene, the day's over. Like, okay, we all know about the famous death dinners. Do you know about the famous death dinners? Okay. Yeah.
I never actually got a death dinner because James and I, what happened was we were scrambling in that episode so hard to do stuff, and they what they decided to do, because we filmed all night that last night that we were there, the night that I did the actual bite thing was the last night, I think. And we were there from 2 in the afternoon till 10 or 11 in the morning. It might have been longer than that. I can't remember. It was a scene where we're all kind of inside the farmhouse still earlier in the episode, and we're trying to figure out where Carl is. And I'm like, he's in the barn. And, you know, we're all, like, figuring that. That was the actual last scene that we filmed. So everybody is literally about to fall asleep. Like, Melissa McBride was like, I'm going to pass out, you know. And we finally just, you know, wrapped it up, and we went to this little roadhouse bar down the road that made breakfast for us. So that was kind of my death dinner. It was the very, very end. You know, that morning we wrapped at 11 o'clock, you know, everybody's bawling their eyes out. Like, everybody, I mean, I'm crying thinking about it. But we were all crying because it was the end for some of us, and, you know, we get
to the end of the season, too.
Yeah, right? And so we go up the road to this place, and I don't know, within a couple hours, we're doing tequila shots, and it's noon, and we hadn't slept. You know?
You must have slept for days, like the day after.
Well, once I got home, I went back to the hotel that day and slept, and then I drove back home the next day, and then I'm back in my world with my kids and all that. So
that would be exhausting.
Well, I have to say, when that first episode that I went down there, I was down there for 3 days. I had been in New York. Flight got canceled. I ended up having to rent a car to get to Georgia. You know, all of a sudden, I'm in the zombie apocalypse, I'm in The Walking Dead, and I come home for 4th of July, and all of a sudden, I'm back in my real world with my family, all my family, because it was 4th of July weekend, and we were at my dad's, you know, we have a party with like 300 people. So all of a sudden, I'm back in that world, and that was the biggest culture shock I have ever felt in my life. Like, that was the most, I mean, literally, I was like, where am I?
All the weird stuff that must be in your head when you look at your kids and you think about what you've just been through, and then you maybe start imagining weird stuff. It must be horrifying.
It was just really weird after those first few days, because I had finally gotten I'd finally gotten a part. I mean, I had quit acting for 15 years, and after I had breast cancer, I started taking classes for like a year, and then I got like one movie, this little Barry Levinson movie called The Bay. And it was another year before The Walking Dead happened. And I didn't know if it would ever happen, quite frankly. So all of a sudden it happens. And it happens like, bam. And then I go home for a few days. And I'm like, home? These are my children. This is my family. This is my house. You know, it was really weird. So, and then after the last episode, you know, decompressing from all of that, from the end of the season, and having to digest the fact that it was over. I mean, it was really pretty depressing. But after a couple of weeks, you know, all of a sudden I was ready to go back and see my friends in Georgia, and it wasn't going to happen again. So I think there's a real feeling for a few months after that, especially till you get another job.
And I've got to ask one thing before we do wrap up. We at Drunk on Comics, we have one question we like to ask a lot of people, and this is the perfect question for you. Do you have a zombie plan? And if so, what is it? Without too many details, because obviously you don't want everybody going there.
Right,
you know.
Right. Well, my best line of self-defense throughout my life has been that I just pull a crazy on somebody. You know, I got followed one time when I lived in Chicago. This guy came in my house, and I just went ballistic on him. I just started screaming at him. And, I mean, he freaked out and ran out the back door. I mean, I didn't leave it at that. I chased him down the street. I was screaming the most obscene things, and I didn't even know what was coming out of my mouth. I was like, I went banshee on him, you know?
Crazy.
Went completely batshit.
Yeah.
And so I've thought about, you know, nobody's really ever tried that, you know, with zombies. I mean, nobody ever really goes, ah! You know,
yeah, apparently it works with bears. Maybe it works with zombies.
It works with intruders.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I might try that first. And then if there's a specific zombie attack, I think, you know, there's a certain amount of ducking and hustling that you can do to get out of there. And then from there, I'd go to the water. You know, I'd head to the ocean would be my solution. And I think that's, but a lot of them talked about that. I'd be headed to a coast.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just because I'm from the coast and I feel safe there.
Find an island, do
but,
something.
Yeah, I would head to the coast. That would be my first thing. I mean, if you could get there. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think we got to wrap it up here. Yep, we've been holding up the line here for a while.
But, just quickly, things that have been happening lately, Dallas Buyers Club, you know, you got to appear in that. That was a good time. You were telling us earlier.
Yeah.
We won't go into it, but people, please check out Jane in the Dallas Buyers Club as well.
And in Prisoners is out on DVD now, too.
Okay, cool. Anything else coming up?
That you can talk about at least?
Yeah, that you can spill.
Yeah, actually, I'm in an episode of Rectify. It's a Sundance Channel show. It's coming up. The season 2 premieres in mid-June, and I'm in the second episode of that.
Cool.
And then I got this movie called Where the Devil Hides that was filmed literally like 2.5 years ago that's supposed to come out soon. I don't really know. Amish slasher movie. Should be really interesting.
Awesome.
Me and it's Russell... Rufus Sewell, Colm Meaney, and Jennifer Carpenter, and it's a pretty good cast. We'll see what happens with that. And then at some point within the end of the year, maybe Mississippi Grind with Ryan Reynolds.
Very fantastic. Cool. Jane, thank you so much.
Thank
appreciate
you, guys. It,
it
was really fun getting to know you guys. I hope I see you at some more of the shows and stuff.
Absolutely. Come up to Canada. Fan Expo, I'm sure, would love to have you. You know, we'd love to see you up north. I know you'd be greatly received, so... But this has been great.
Yeah, best of luck to you. And where can people find you?
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter and stuff?
I'm on Twitter and I don't have a Twitter and an Instagram, and I'm on IMDb if you look up Jane McNeil. So
awesome! Thanks again.
All right, Matt and Tony here with the very talented Scotty Young. Scotty, how's the show been for you?
Oh, it's been great. Really fun weekend. A lot of cool fans. So it's been great.
All right, so for some of our listeners who may not know the style and the art that you have, go ahead and explain that a bit.
I would just say that I have just a classic cartoonist style, maybe. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I'm kind of known for doing the kind of little young version of the Marvel characters right now, the little chibi baby characters or whatever people call them. But I've also done sort of the kind of whimsical fairy tale-esque art for the Oz stuff over the last 6 years, so... I don't know. It's just I don't actually know what style to call my style. It's just the way that I draw. So.
And it is very different than most drawings. Like, you can just tell it is a Scotty Young drawing when you see it. So.
Oh, well, thank you, man. Thank you.
What do you think is... I mean, you've done so many of the Marvel characters. What character do you think is particularly hard to kind of translate into your style? Are there any of them that give you some troubles?
I mean, I don't think any of them have come up yet that have really really given me troubles. I mean, I usually, if there are characters in a, you know, if there's a cover with a, you know, a big team, and sometimes I'll pick a couple of the stronger characters that I think will fit in that little style. And sometimes designs, when you boil them down to a small figure, start to get complicated. So I like to pick people with like really simple, clean designs, and then once you boil those down, you can still translate into that little version. So but nothing comes to mind as being too difficult.
Which character do you get asked to draw the most?
A lot of little Deadpool, a lot of little Spideys. Probably little Spidey. A lot of little Captain Americas, though, too. But probably little Spidey and Deadpool probably take the cake.
See, I love the lowercase a on Captain.
I will say that's that moment that I came up with that, I actually thought, yep, I nailed it. So I'm pretty proud of the lowercase a.
Is there one that you particularly like to draw the most?
I really enjoy Baby Galactus.
Okay.
Again, kind of there was one of those moments while I was writing that Avengers versus X-Men, kind of the baby's version, where I wrote Galactus drinking his planet bottle.
Yeah.
Pretty proud of that moment. So Galactus is fun because you can always come up with some pretty good gags. And any of the Deadpool's kind of good, but yeah, Galactus is probably my favorite.
Now, we've talked to many people who have done covers before and how that comes about where they kind of know what may be happening, they kind of don't. Like, and a lot of yours is just more kind of fun, and I don't want to say whimsical in a bad way,
right.
But just like
yeah.
Interesting. But do you sure. have kind of a feeling for what's going to be inside the book for what you do with the covers, or you kind of say,
no.
I like these characters?
I will ask about the general tone of the book rather than what's specifically in issue one. Because, again, I mostly do first issues.
Okay.
The only one that I got kind of slightly issue-specific was when I did all six of the... was it four or six? Whatever. All four or six of the...
Infinity?
Yeah, Infinity. Yeah, Infinity. Yeah, there were six of those. So that because I was doing all of those, I wanted those to kind of be themed towards the inside. But the rest of them, I just do number one. So I just need a general tone. Because, again, it's a variant cover, and it's a lot about collecting and getting them all Garbage Pail Kid style. And so I don't know if I don't really need – I get the benefit of not needing to sell what's on the inside. I'm just selling kind of a fun moment.
Yep. Now, how did you get started in the business?
Oh, gosh. That's a much longer – that's a pretty long thing. I just went to conventions like this when I was young, and one thing led to another. So that's the very, very short answer, but – you could probably dig around online for the super long answer.
Other than covers, you're also doing Rocket Raccoon
uh-huh.
in the series.
Yeah.
How's that?
It's great.
How's that different maybe than what you're...
Well, I'm writing and drawing that, so I'm writing that full series and drawing that series, so, you know, it's exactly what I want it to be.
Do you ever get frustrated with the artist and be like, why can't you do what
yeah,
I wrote?
Yeah, and then I'm like, this stupid writer, why'd he write all these ships for me to draw? yeah, so it's perfect because I get to avoid all those things, which is like, I don't want to draw that, so I just won't write it.
Now, would you say, since you are primarily an artist, would you say that you have this visually kind of put out in your head and then you're kind of coming up with the dialogue, or how is that?
No, I usually sit down and I will come up with kind of a story concept and type it out and do an outline for my story and everything and write the dialogue and everything, and then I go out and I start laying it out visually. And as I start laying it out, then I start to tweak the script a little bit as I go because I'll have different ideas or new ideas will pop up. So that's another good thing about being able to write and draw it all myself is there's a lot of creating and building the story as I go along as opposed to just being handed a script and, you know, and drawing somebody else's ideas.
Now, was this an idea that came from you, or did Marvel approach you and say, hey, we want you to take this baby and do it?
Oz was coming to an end, and they just asked me what kind of projects I'd like to do next, and I threw out a couple characters that I'd like to draw and write, and I knew I wanted to write my next project, and Rocket Raccoon was one of those characters. So, you know, again, it was kind of, at the time, they were still kind of early in the movie stuff, so it happened to be pretty... good timing that, you know, there'd be a movie coming out and things like that. So, and people have been really responding to the character leading up to that and the promo stuff. So, it's all just really good timing that I kind of brought that up.
Have you been a Guardians of the Galaxy fan then?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'm not super, it's hard for me to, stay as up on current comics as I used to when I was younger, simply because I'm just busy all the time.
Dude,
but the stuff that I read, like Abbott and Lanning and stuff they were doing, and then I do really like the Bendis stuff with, you know, McNiven and Sarah Bocelli. There's some pretty fun stuff there, yeah, for sure.
All right, well, Scotty, we see that you have a pretty big line starting right now, so we'll quick wrap this up. Where can our listeners reach you? Are you on Twitter? Are you on Facebook?
Yep, Scotty Young, everything, at Scotty Young, scottyyoung.com. I have a Scotty Young fan page on Facebook, I believe, and I have a Tumblr at scottyyoung.com, so that's pretty much it, I think.
All right, well, we can't wait to see Rocket Raccoon come
out. Awesome, dude.
Thanks,
brother. Yep. Appreciate it, man.
All right, wrapping up here Sunday at Motor City Comic Con, and I am here with Mr. Mike McCone. Mike, how you doing, sir?
Good, how are you?
Doing fantastic.
Good.
So, kind of excited because new book just hit here last Wednesday for Justice League United.
Uh-huh.
And working on that. What can you tell us a little about, you know, our listeners who maybe didn't grab it yet,
okay,
why they should?
I guess the main reason why they should is because I'm drawing it.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. That was the selling point for me, seeing your name.
Well,
on the
also, front. Comic book superstar Jeff Lemire is writing the book.
Yes.
And he is, I guess, one of the rising talents of the industry right now.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah. We've been loving, you know, his work on Trillium and all that. So.
Exactly. Trillium, Essex County.
Yeah.
And his kind of his corporate chill work. Animal Man and Green Arrow, I guess,
yeah,
are fantastic too. So, I think it's a decent team. And the book is kind of interesting. It's not the mainstream. It's not the Justice League your daddy is familiar with.
Yeah.
They're based in Canada and outer space. So if you're like either one of those places, there's something in there for you.
Well, and there's a brand new character in the book.
There is. There's a character called Equinox, who is a First Nation Cree. Canadian character, and Jeff has researched the whole kind of area of northern Canada, Moose Knee, Moose Factory, Moose Jaw, very heavily. So we looked at a lot of reference. And,
now, did I understand correctly that I heard that the character was loosely based on a woman who was an activist for?
Well, it's I'm not sure how much we should say about it, who she's based on, in case we get a lawsuit.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I think physically she's based on one of Jeff's friend's daughters.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And I guess Jeff is in a better position to speak about who she's actually based on.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Thematically.
Yeah. Now, I actually first became familiar with your work back on Excise.
Okay.
And so the one question I've got, I'll let you get back here real quick.
Uh-huh.
How excited are you to see Blink on film here next week?
Pretty excited. I didn't create Blink. I didn't really have anything to do with her creation. But I drew for a couple of years, so
yeah.
It'll be interesting. I hear there's lots of kind of snippets and vignettes of different characters from different realities in the movie.
Yeah.
So it might be more than just Blink who we see on screen.
Ooh.
It might be. I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but I'm kind of interested.
Yeah.
I'll have to wait until the DVD because I don't do movie theaters anymore.
Oh, okay.
Too much texting, too much talking, too many nachos. I don't do that, so.
Yeah, I can't blame you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mike, I will let you go. I just wanted to stop by and say
well,
hello.
Thank you.
Where can people find you online if they want to check out your work and all
probably
that?
The best place is either Facebook or Twitter.
Okay.
I do have a DeviantArt page and a Tumblr. I can actually give you one of my cards. Which,
perfect.
yeah.
And I'll share it with everybody.
Okay, cool. Yeah. There you go.
yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have any other projects coming up or anything else that you're working on that people should know about?
No, this is me for the time being.
Perfect.
I've got covers here and there. It's Justice League Canada / United for the time being.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. And can't wait to see more from you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I thought we were going to talk for 10 minutes.
All right, well, Tony and Derek here, last day at Motor City, and...
we are with the fabulous Dirk Manning, as always.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank
and
you.
He just agreed to do an interview, so...
So, what do you want to know?
Well, I want to know how the show's been for you guys, honestly. And I want... Actually, before that... Well, first, how's your show been?
It's been great.
Yeah.
Been great? Good,
yeah,
good.
It's been a lot of fun. Talked to a lot of really talented people, and you...
right, that's true story.
We interviewed a lot of good people today, sir.
I've had a lot of good people interview me before you guys came up, so it's worked out pretty well.
Awesome.
But how'd your panel go? Because, you know, we run into each other, and I always feel so bad because...
Because you ran long over our,
yeah,
over
so
our podcast.
Yeah, so ours had to go short.
No, I don't think that's quite what happened. I think it's the fact that I actually pulled the table out so you guys could go behind it, set up, and you chose not to. Because you were so enraptured with what I was saying, which is typical. That I understand that.
Well, you're an attractive man, but if you put the three of us behind you, no one will even be able to pay attention.
Well, I was thinking other things might happen if the three of you got behind me. So in that case, I appreciate you not going behind me. But I feel bad because I left the panel and all these people are coming to the table to buy books so I get to stay. So how'd your live podcast go?
It went pretty well.
It was quicker than normal, but
right. So what can people expect if they go to one of your live podcasts?
you know, it changes every time.
They can expect us not to be dead, that's for sure. We will be alive.
Yeah, that's...
Will you?
Yeah.
That's a hard-ass lyric. The show's not over.
Actually, the one thing they can expect is, crude humor and adult language. That does happen.
And them to find out that we really don't edit anything. We just go straight through and... how it goes.
Were there any rabble rousers out there? Any hecklers or anything?
No hecklers. People that were definitely wanted to just have their own show at the beginning, which is, you know, cool. I mean, we talk to people, but, you know, we're on a time slot. We got to get recording. So as soon as we got the equipment set, we're like, okay, got to start. But, you know, it's cool, you know, and then try and give a couple minutes at the end. And what's funny is as soon as you hit that record at the end, does anybody have any questions? Crickets.
Yeah. Cheep, cheep. Beep, beep. Right.
Yeah.
So I got one other question for you guys. You've done a lot of interviews and stuff, and besides me, because I mean we want to weigh our answers. Besides me, who's the coolest? What's the coolest interview you guys got to do this weekend?
Tie for top two.
Yeah, I would say that interview that we can't air on the show with Seth the Moose. I mean, that was just that kid there. That guy won't shut up.
He opened up.
Oh, yeah, he was just talking so much.
Well, no. And I appreciate the fact. I appreciate that you were able to work with me on a fair price, so that you won't air that interview, so people won't know what really goes on behind the mask of Dirk Manning. So thank you for that. So that aside, were there any other ones that were highlights you guys?
The top two for me were Bob Camp and Billy Zabka.
Yeah, and I would say both of those. The Bob Camp one, did not even know that was going to be able to happen, but a really cool friend of ours somehow introduced us and just made that happen.
Yeah, so
must be nice to have friends like that.
Seth the Moose, we want to thank you. Actually, Dirk is the man who introduced us to Bob, and that was wonderful.
So. No, yeah, he's cool. I was really bummed out that you guys want some Cthulhu mints. I don't want to wear you out. You're probably not used to talking much. But I was so bummed out. You don't want Cthulhu in your mouth?
Oh, we're gonna have a little talk.
We'll talk later. All right. The birds and the bees and the Cthulhus. He was doing a panel next to my room when I was doing mine. I'm like, oh,
he's
my
in there.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, and I want to go see him.
You could hear him through. Like, he's so animated, which is funny because he animates.
Right. Well, he had the mic, and usually I don't need a mic. My voice carries well enough; it's not an issue.
Hey, wait. I don't mean to interrupt, but aren't you interviewing us?
I am.
Okay.
What I'm telling you guys is, you guys may be able to appreciate this. My voice carries enough that it wasn't an issue and things like that. But point being, I was just really happy that you guys got to interview him because he's amazing. He's a guy that, I mean, as I'm sure you guys can relate, you could interview him 100 times.
He'll never say the same thing twice.
He'll never say the same thing twice.
Nope.
So I'm really glad that happened for you guys.
Yeah, it was... That was great. And you know, from the media side, Billy Zabka, you know, from The Karate Kid,
hanging out with them all nights.
Yeah.
Every night.
Hanging out with them Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then getting the interview, and then...
Someone was walking around, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, someone in a Karate Kid outfit in the shower.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. And he, like, saw that person walking around and went and took a picture with her.
Yeah.
Just, like, walking around, I was like, hey, come here, can I get it? He's like, can I get a picture with you?
Yeah.
How cool is that? Best photo of the show? You guys have a best photo of the show?
Breakfast Club.
Well, I think the best one was dinner last night where your face is uncovered.
Oh, the stretched out one, right?
No. Actually, I have some on my own that are yet to be released.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, I'll add to my payment plan to set the moose. But on that note, I think we should wrap this up. So I appreciate your guys' time, allowing me the chance to interview you.
Thank you.
Very appreciated.
Thank you. We appreciate you, wanting to do an interview with us.
Well, you know, it's good to mix it up once in a while. You know, what happens at Comic-Con stays at Comic-Con. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. All right, guys, go out and actually find Dirk Manning. Look him up, harass him like we love to. And we'll catch you later.
Nothing but love.
So hopefully you enjoyed that last interview we had up. You got to know a little bit more about at least me and Derek.
Yeah, well, and I mean, really, that's why everybody's listening to this fucking shit is because they want to know more about us, right?
Yep. Not any of the guests there.
All right, guys. Once again, huge thank you to Motor City Comic Con for having us back on their 25th anniversary. And keep your ears peeled. We will be back later this week with what?
It
the last set of interviews, which are our favorite ones, the drunken interviews.
Yes, but they're also the longest and most in-depth, I think.
They are a lot of fun.
So, all right, guys, cheers, take care, and we'll be back later on this week.